Danny and Dusty.
All right, my rock smashes your scissors.
No, not these scissors, pal. This is a special titanium steel alloy developed by NASA for the space program. These scissors that smash your rock to smithereens.
Not this rack. This rock happens to be kryptonite.
With the latest on the Blazers, Ducks, Beavers, and the hottest topics in sports.
Hey, what's happening, Norm?
Well, it's a dog-eat-dog world, Sammy, and I'm wearing milk-bone underwear.
Danny and Dusty on the Odyssey app and 1080.
No!
The Fan.
Hour 3 here on a Monday afternoon here on Danny and Dusty, whether you're listening on 1080 AM, watching along on YouTube.com/1080 AM The Fan, or Twitch.tv/1080 AM The Fan. We appreciate you. We love you on what is fall number 7 or summer number 12. I'm not exactly sure where we're falling now in our interchange between summer and fall.
Yeah, this is weird, but I'm here for it. I'm here for all of it. The longer that we have nice weather during football season, the better. And then people can go ahead and bitch about the rain.
Does it feel fally yet? We had that one day where it like poured down rain, no. But that was it.
No, okay.
Does it feel like the leaves are really turning
yet? I'm looking at weather says next Monday.
Like 54 chance of rain.
No, 66 with a 35% chance of rain.
So we're still not even really there.
I guess
really
it's 35% coverage of rain.
We are not even hitting those 50s days yet.
No, next Wednesday, 61. That's the lowest that we'll see.
Really?
For a high temperature, yeah. God. I'm here for it, man.
I mean, don't get me wrong, I love it. I remember in high school once, I was like, we had a game, I want to say it was at sunset, and I swear to God, it was nighttime. It was like 74 degrees on the 18th. I just burned into my head because it was my birthday.
That's crazy.
And I was like, why is it so warm out here?
I think it was last year, my kid's birthday is in the middle of October, and we did a party out front. Like, we had a tent and everything set up, but it was 80 degrees that day.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's weird, right? It's just like you don't really know how to kind of walk through that. Speaking of weird things and things you don't necessarily know how to walk through or navigate, Portland Trailblazers fans are used to injuries, that's for sure.
Yeah, they are.
And unfortunately, there's two injuries, one a little bit more severe than the other. First one, I'm going to say minor, but not any less, you know, problematic, because Robert Williams III has a left hamstring strain on his return to play. Rob had his right knee repaired this past year, had his left knee repaired the year before, without, you know, getting a look at it myself and talking to his doctors. My first thought, considering I've been through these procedures multiple times, is this sounds like a compensation injury as you're returning to play. Hopefully that's all it is. You know, it's just the, you know, working through imbalances and trying to work the kinks out. It's just when you have surgeries on both knees, this is kind of what happens.
I think the most discouraging part is that now you have a injury history that it continues to get longer and longer. And he had knee surgery last year. He had, what, two with the Celtics? Is that correct? Mm-hmm. I mean, he has missed a lot of games and a lot of time.
He's played 41 games in the last 2 years.
If you look down his injury history, it's not just the same thing, though. No. It's both knees, hamstring, ankle, toe, calf, toe, foot, knee,
the thing that happens
hip,
when you're 6'10".
Back.
This is, you know, lower body ailments.
Groin. I mean,
he's a load, too.
Yeah, he's I think he's listed at 250. He's probably closer to 270. He's a big old boy.
Yeah, that's not good.
No. And Rob is about as real as it gets. I think I've mentioned it here before. I talked to him last year when he kind of was more around after rehab last year, and he was fighting some demons with the rehab stuff, in the sense of not physically, like the mental and emotional stuff. And when you're 25 years old and you're in your peak and prime physical shape, it's a difficult thing to deal with when you're you think you're back and it's another thing. You think you're back, it's another thing. You think you're back, it's another thing. It's like, and I hate it when people are like, oh, you know, you can't trust him. He's injured. It's not him, man. It's not him. It's his body. And it's nothing he can do.
No.
It's not because he's lazy. It's not because he's not doing stuff. It's not because he doesn't care. And that's like the most frustrating part of it, is that part of it. And so I hope that this is just a minor setback on what he can at least return to some sort of normalcy. The other side of this is a more severe injury. Shaedon Sharpe has been ruled out for at least 4 to 6 weeks with a small posterior labral tear in his shoulder.
Labrum tear means your shoulder's dislocating, and that is never a good thing. And surgery is usually required.
And that's the thing is, this is the same shoulder that Shaden injured 5.5 minutes into his rookie season at Summer League. He ultimately came back that season and was ready to go and played 80 games, could have played in 81. He was sat down in game 82 because of the tank fest against the Spurs and trying to get Wemby. But last year, he missed 50 games.
With the core abdominal, and groin. Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't want to say he's injury prone. I've seen a bunch of people say, oh, he's Nasir Little, he's Brandon Roy, he's Greg Oden. It's like, maybe. I don't think we're there yet, but for everybody who's saying that he is, you're not wrong. That's the problem, is you're not wrong. Because no. You're dealing with, and Dusty, thankfully, I've only dislocated my shoulder once, and it was a minor one. Do you had surgery on yours?
Nope, didn't get surgery.
Okay, so you didn't have surgery.
No, yeah, I've just dislocated it like a jillion times yeah. Now.
So, but once it goes once, you're more prone to it over and over and over again.
Yeah, and if you're not going to get surgery and you're going to go, even with like a minor tear, if you're going to get... if you're going to go the route of non-surgery, you have to strengthen every muscle around it, which takes years to do. And, you know, knock on particle board.
Yeah.
But
it's a wood-based product.
I haven't had a shoulder dislocation in a few years because of the fact that
you're not playing basketball.
I have tried so hard. No, like it was sliding out like when I'd sit in a chair, right? Like I would go and like brace my arm and it would just boom, pop out. You reach in the back seat of the car, boom, your shoulder's gone. It was, you can go through those things, but you have to strengthen every single muscle around it. And it takes a long time to do that. He doesn't have that time. And that's why guys usually go the surgery route. Now, you said this was the same shoulder that he hurt Summer League heading into his rookie year. And he didn't miss any time. Well, there's a big difference between hurting your shoulder in July and hurting your shoulder in October, right? I mean, that is a massive, massive difference in the timeline, how long it'll take you to get back. So that sucks for him. It's awful for him, and they're not really playing for anything.
No, and the thing is, one of the biggest considerations for the season is the development of Shaden Sharpe and whether or not he was going to be a role player guy or a good player or if he had more in the tank. And you just, much like last year, last year was a lost season because of the amount of data they weren't able to capture.
And this is another one. You don't know what you have with him.
No, and it's not, his season isn't over, but I would prepare yourself accordingly. Normally I tell everybody just relax. I would prepare for the worst in surgery, and then if it doesn't happen, roll it back.
Yeah, Fentress posted a video of him walking out of practice today with his shoulder in a sling. Doesn't look good.
No, he's going to be immobilized in a swing for a couple weeks, a sling for a couple of weeks. And so for the whole like return to play stuff, he's going to not use his arm for a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Which means he's not going to be back in 4 to 6 weeks. Like, that's just the reality here. The unfortunate part of this is there was some positive momentum around the team. It's the new TV deal. Everyone's healthy. You're getting these opportunities to see Shaden and Anthony and Denny and just kind of see where things go. And everybody kind of knows what this season is after last year, and that you were invested in the young guys developing, and you're being robbed of that for no reason other than the cosmic gods of basketball being cruel.
Yeah.
So what does this mean for the team? In all likelihood, Scoot Henderson is now going to start in his place. There is a world that exists, because they are now going to be short of guard for a couple of weeks, that it could be Matisse Thybulle starting. That way you still have Ant at the one, then it's Tease at the two, Denny at the three, Jeremy at the four, DA at the five. That makes more sense, and it allows Scoot to kind of continue running with the backup unit, which he has been doing in camp for the most part. However, if you caught DeAndre Ayton's media availability on Friday that I put up, DeAndre mentioned that when asked him about who's kind of looked good in camp, and he mentioned Scoot, and he goes, you know, he's out there, you know, going to be our starting guard.
Whoops.
Kind of let that one slip. So I definitely cast a side eye like, that's interesting. So I would anticipate, again, that Scoot is probably going to be your starter, but I think there's a world that he could still come off the bench and play 30 minutes a night. So,
all right.
There we are. There's your Blazers news on a football Monday.
That's
because,
not
unfortunately,
good.
It's not good news, and it does pertain to the season, which, by the way, Friday gets underway up in Seattle.
Hey!
Well, they'll take on the Clippers, who,
pew, pew, pew.
Where their injured superstar Kawhi Leonard will not play.
Have we found out if that one's going to be televised yet or not?
It will not be carried locally.
Okay.
So if it is carried, it won't be carried locally. There, as of right now, the 18th will be carried. There maybe might be another one.
Okay.
They are efforting that, as I understand. Right. So, but the October 18th game against the Jazz, I think, that preseason game should be carried by K2.
All right, cool.
So, all right, coming up next.
First time we get to see it on K2.
There you go.
Let's go.
We will dive into the absolute crazy bleeping S show that was Cal Miami. Here on Danny Dusty, Danny the Fan.
Phenomenal.
College game day started in Berkeley at 3 o'clock in the morning. Cal students, alumni, and local psychopaths showed up in mass, in force, with some absolutely tremendous game day signs.
Look, there were guys there. My favorite one was you're blocking the library.
Yes.
I think
very on brand for Cal.
There was another one too. I only do lines of code.
Code, yes, because yeah. It was woke versus coke.
Yes,
which tremendous, tremendous. And the game ended on the cokehead side, ending at like 3 o'clock in the morning on the East Coast, late into the night as the college game day crew again there at the butt crack of dawn. But Reese Davis started off the morning and finished at 1 o'clock in the morning, working a 22-hour day.
Yeah, so it was the call time, I guess, was 3 o'clock for game day crew to be there, and that game went to the wee hours of the morning. He didn't get out of there till like 1 a.m. It'd be a 22-hour day, Bob. His voice was shot at the beginning. I was like,
yeah,
floored when I heard him at the beginning. I was like, is he going to lose his voice halftime?
I mean, you typically don't. I mean, he makes the exception, but a lot of play-by-play guys, they aren't going to be doing a whole lot of talking.
No.
Before they go talk for 3.5 hours.
Not for 3 hours every single morning before you call a game. But it was one hell of a game once it all started. Mm-hmm. And Fernando Mendoza, not just a fun name to say. If we talked about this, like it is.
Can we give a shout out to not just to Mendoza, but all of the gamer quarterbacks we currently have, whether it's Diego Pavia, whether it's John Mateer, whether it's Fernando Mendoza. College football has got absolute dudes. No, they're not NFL guys. But just gamers.
Yeah, Mendoza, though, he fits that bill of, like, 1 minute you're going, yeah. The next you're like, oh, my God, that was the worst thing I've ever seen.
But it makes for just absolutely epic and enthralling games.
And that's exactly what we had with Cal in Miami. And, look, again, Miami got another one of those Cam Ward games where he won them the game. He did. Him and Xavier Restrepo, that's a fun name to say. It reminds me of Parks and Rec.
That's a super villain.
Yeah, but Restrepo is the city commissioner in Parks and Rec.
Oh, okay. I missed that.
I added that to my list to finally watch.
Oh, it's a great show. But Cam Ward was just playing 500 with Restrepo, and he was finding soft spots, and he was wide open. But Cam Ward that cost Washington State games, and we've talked about this like weeks 5, 6, 7, there's like this lull with Cam Ward every single year where he has some just boneheaded throws. Like the interception that he threw is one of the worst interceptions you will see. Rolling to your right and trying to throw back across the middle of the field. It is cardinal sin number one of a quarterback is do not roll one way and try to throw back across your field, across the field in desperation. And he got picked off and it damn near cost him. But the plays that he made in that game outweighed his dumb that he made at times. And that Miami team as a whole is far better than the team that they had at Washington State. So they can rally back. You have trust in a defense that, hey, they're going to come up with stops eventually. I can't believe Cal lost a game where they had a 25-point lead with under 4 minutes to play in the third quarter. It was brutal to see. But then there was also, like, by rule, I don't know how that was not a targeting. And I don't, Miami doesn't win that game if targeting is called.
No.
Player ducked his head. I mean, crown of the helmet, made contact with the helmet of Mendoza. And like Brock Osweiler basically just broke it down and said, yep, there it is right there. That's targeting. I don't see how you go to review and you're like, yeah, well, play stands. Wasn't confirmed because on the field they called no targeting. Mm-hmm. He said the ruling on the field stands. That was textbook targeting. Crown of the helmet, head was down. I think what we are seeing is officials are pulling back on targeting calls.
I think
they are so punitive. I do not like the rule one bit in that if it happens in the second half, you have to sit out the first half of the next game. Kicking a guy out of a game for the first one is just stupid. But, you know, there were fans calling for the one on Dylan Gabriel where he got lit up. I mean, I think that was more of a football play than what we saw. I thought it was more cut and dry in the Mendoza thing of targeting on Fernando Mendoza. But you get no call there. You need to be able to make a play. And you need to stop them, and you need to stop the bleeding. They didn't do that.
No.
And I give Miami credit for making the plays down the stretch to win the game. Game-winning touchdown, don't know how that's not an eligible man downfield. You had two linemen.
No, 3 yards downfield.
3 yards downfield? They were in the end zone. Like, you're sitting there, and you're looking around going, holy crap, like, I don't want officials dictating the outcome of a game, but when it's egregious, holy crap.
The flip side of this is, maybe don't give up first down on 3rd and 20.
Yeah, maybe don't give up
28 unanswered.
Well, they had a 4th and 10 that Miami converted.
Yeah,
like there that's not like blaming the officials. Don't go down that route.
No.
There were two blown calls. Stop them at any one of those, and you're good.
Numerous times where you could have stopped them.
And that to me is Miami came up with plays when they needed them the most. I mean, you know, Cam Ward throws a pick six. Get used to it. But they ended up making the plays down the stretch, and Cal just didn't.
Is Miami feeling like a team of destiny or just an absolute S show? Because it feels weird, it does feel kind of team of destiny-ish. I don't want to go that far because the ACC has been so trash. But Cam Ward has made play after play after play after play. I mean, he has been phenomenal in the most just crushing moments. Okay.
I will ask you this. Has Miami played a good team yet?
No, and that's my hesitation.
Okay, they've played Florida. Mopped them, though.
Yes.
Florida A&M. Ball State, mm-hmm. South Florida, Virginia Tech, and Cal.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I would say you have not played a good team yet.
And that's my pause.
Will they play a good team?
Probably not.
At Louisville, against Florida State.
And they choked.
Duke, at Georgia Tech, Wake Forest, at Syracuse.
Is Georgia Tech the best team on that?
I think Louisville is.
Even though they...
Bleh. I think Louisville probably is the best team on there. Syracuse just won in overtime against UNLV where UNLV kind of got hosed at the end of that game. I don't know. I don't think they will not have a top 25 win.
No.
I don't know if... And then it'll come down to the conference championship game.
God, who do they play?
Clemson.
Clemson. Yeah.
They'll play Clemson in the conference championship game. Like, their resume isn't going to be great, but they could be a top 4 seed. The winner of that's going to be a top 4 seed.
Because Clemson's only loss at that point would be Georgia.
Yeah.
And
Clemson's not playing bad football.
No, they remind me so much of Oregon 2 years ago.
SMU just cracked into the top 25. They're 5-1, but like, the ACC is in a really weird position right now.
You can say bad.
I think it's a very bad conference. But Miami also, they get the breaks of, like, they don't play Pitt, no. which is also, like, a good team in there. Yeah. They don't play SMU, which is a good team. They don't play Virginia, which is also a decent team this year. Like, there's a lot of one-loss teams that have not done a whole heck of a lot and have lost, like, any big crossover Power Four conference game is their only loss. Mm-hmm. But Miami doesn't play them.
No.
I mean, their toughest games from here on out will be Louisville coming off the bye.
Mm-hmm.
And then
Georgia Tech.
Maybe Georgia Tech. No. I mean, Georgia Tech is a two-loss team right now.
But they're a functional team.
Yeah, functional. But I think the only time we've seen Georgia Tech this year is they beat a really bad Florida State team in Ireland,
mm-hmm.
right? They lost to Syracuse, they lost to Louisville, and then they've just kind of, you know?
But again, that's my hesitation.
Yeah.
But there's
surviving is key.
There's something to be said of when you're put in those situations and those circumstances and you keep coming out on top.
That is
it. Or you kind of go, are they playing down to their competition?
Holy, in college football, I see it as the whole is, if you win, who gives an F?
Well, we used to care about style points in the BCS world.
Yeah.
We don't care about that anymore.
And that was when style points were ridiculous, yes. because it's like, it doesn't matter.
No.
Just win the damn game. And Miami found a way to win the game. And look, Mario Cristobal, he's been a guy that late game management has been
jacked
much
all over it.
To desired for. Well, guess what? When you're getting beat by 25 with 4 minutes to go in the third quarter, your game management doesn't matter. So the guys can go out and play loose and they can play free.
Or you can rely on Joe Judge.
And then when it got tight at the end of the game, they made the plays to win. Like they did,
and it wasn't just one play. It was play after play after play after play.
So I look at Miami and I say, have they played a good team? No. Will they?
Probably not.
Probably not. But you know what? If you find a way to win, I don't care.
No.
You know? And we'll let the dust settle when it comes time for the college football playoff. And they're going to have a first round bye, and they're likely going to have the 5 seed. In that second round of the playoff, and then we'll really find out what Miami has. And you know what?
And if they get mopped, that's the way it goes.
I'm here for it.
Yeah.
I'm here for it because you know what? That also rewards the 5 seed, right?
Because now they get the clear path.
And the 5 seed is a team that was the best team not to win their conference championship.
And they might be, and likely will be, an SEC team, and they'll probably be better than everyone else.
You know what the scary part is, though? The ACC champ may be the 3 seed.
Oh, God.
Who in the Big 12 right now?
That's true.
Who is it in the Big 12? Iowa State. Iowa State right now is unbeaten. Utah already has a loss. Yep. BYU.
God, you want to talk about clear paths.
The ACC may be the 3 seed.
Ugh.
And if Miami goes unbeaten, they deserve it. Hell, right now, Miami and Clemson, if they play against each other, that's a better... Whoever wins that game in the conference championship has a better win than anybody in the Big 12 will have.
Yeah, you're right.
From a roster construction standpoint, the talent on the field, yeah, they will.
Well, crazy to think, too, we might not be too far off from Boise State being a 4 seed and having a first round bye.
Yeah, I don't think they can work that high up in the rankings.
You don't think so?
They have so much ground
to gain. If they had beaten Oregon, you would probably have the argument.
I don't think Boise has that in them. They don't.
Yeah. All right. Coming up next. Speaking of Oregon,
I actually don't think they can based on the rules. I think the Power Four conferences get
guaranteed
the top four.
I thought it was that
because that's
highest,
why
I thought it was
Notre
the four
Dame.
Highest ranked
because
conference I, champions.
Yeah.
We'll have to dig into that.
It ain't going to be Boise.
It won't matter.
There's
because,
no win on Boise State's schedule that will vault them.
And they would probably have to be perfect.
Yeah, had they beaten Oregon.
They will have to be perfect. Yeah. And the best team that they've played, they lost to.
Yeah. Had they beaten,
and it was in week 2. No.
But had they beaten Oregon, you could maybe squint and see it. But
if they had beaten Oregon, I would have no problem with them doing that.
Yeah.
If they ran the table with a win on the road, yeah.
Yeah.
No doubt.
Coming up next, speaking of Oregon, the biggest game in Autzen football history? We'll take a nice little look at the Oregon Ducks welcoming the Ohio State Buckeyes for the biggest early season Big Ten showdown coming up next year. But first, it's the Big Kahuna Sports Center Update.
I hear they got some tasty burgers.
Number three, Oregon Ducks are going to welcome in the number two Ohio State Buckeyes on Saturday to Autzen Stadium for what will be the biggest regular season showdown in Autzen history?
Well, if you look by rankings, yes. If you look by opponent in the cachet, yes. If you look at the demand for the ticket, yes. I don't think it's really a question. I mean, you can go back and you can look at, you know, this isn't the first time that Oregon has hosted a top 10 matchup. Mm-hmm. If you just go back to, you know, 2007, you had back-to-back weeks, there were top 10 matchups in Autzen, where it was USC, Oregon was ranked 5th, SC was ranked 9th. The next week, it was Arizona State, where Oregon was ranked 4th, and Arizona State was ranked 6th. I think that's what it was. I think they were ranked 6th that year. I'm going to have to go check that. Yeah, they were ranked 6th that year.
God. Got that high, huh?
Yeah. Dennis Erickson.
Yeah.
I think it was Vontaze Burfict may have been on that team. They were really... Burfict was
later.
Barkley, right?
Yeah,
he was after.
Yeah.
But that was a really good Arizona State team that year. You had... 2009, USC, that was Oregon was ranked 10th, SC was 4th. The 2010 season was Stanford, where Oregon was ranked 4th and Stanford was ranked 9th. And then the Michigan State game in 2014, where Michigan State was ranked 7th and the Ducks were ranked 3rd heading into that year. Like that, those are the games that you're talking about. This is 2-3. This is Ohio State coming into Oregon. These are two teams with starting out the year national championship aspirations and conversations around both of these rosters. Two of the rosters that had going into the year, people were talking about them being the two of the best rosters in all of college football. And it's a conference game in the first year of the Big Ten. When you add all of that up together, yeah, I think this is the biggest game in Autzen Stadium history. And I don't think it's particularly close right now.
No, I think this is what you sign up for when you sign up for the Big Ten.
Yeah.
Is being a part of these matchups.
Yep.
This is... I'm going to be interested to see just how many Ohio State fans get in the building.
A lot. I'm not going
to... Because they travel, but, you know, as a home team, you do what you can to limit those visitors getting in.
But here's the thing. When tickets are going for $2,200 a pop, like, good, not great tickets.
Yeah.
Like... $3,600. If you want to get on like the 50-yard line,
season ticket sellers are going to sell them.
$3,600 per ticket.
Yeah, because that pays for your season tickets and then some.
But I think that you are also seeing a clamoring from Oregon fans to want to be there. Mm-hmm. You know, I talked with Lanning after the game and I asked him like, "What is the message for fans?" Because Ohio State is something that they've been eyeing for a while. He said, "Show up early. Stay for 4 hours, scream the entire time."
Mm-hmm.
Like, that is the atmosphere that when the head coach is talking about it, minutes after they beat Michigan State,
they're thinking about it.
They've been thinking about it for a really long time. Mm-hmm. There's going to be a buzz and an electricity in that stadium that is what makes college football great. It makes it unique from the NFL. It makes it unique from any level of football. The stadium capacity, be damned, you're probably going to see 60,000 people in Autzen Stadium. That's going to be fun. That's going to be electric. That's going to be a buzz. I heard that somebody on the news had said that, like 60,000. I'm like, that's not how many people can be in there. But it's going to be pretty dang close. And they're going to do everything they can to limit the red. They ain't going to be like Vanderbilt, where there's 80% Alabama fans. There's going to be a big contingency of Ohio State fans.
They travel.
Well, a lot of them don't have to. Yeah, they don't have to because there's a huge following here in the city of Portland of Ohio State fans.
Your two biggest public universities when you're talking about graduates are Ohio State and Michigan. That's why they're everywhere.
This game has got all of the makings of an incredible atmosphere, an incredible environment. And look, there is something to, I think the sense of pride that people have about from Duck fans of being loud, right? The mm-hmm. Lloyd Carr comment of it being the loudest place that he's ever been.
Look, I've been to five games at Autzen. The first quarter of Oregon USC last season was the loudest I've ever heard it. And I know that's not the loudest that place has ever been, but mm-hmm. that place was deafening.
Yep.
I was the second row in the visitor sideline, and you can feel it from the behind you roar down on the field.
It is
a sight, man. And it's unlike in like using a place I've been to a thousand times, Memorial Coliseum in LA. It's not loud. Even when you get 100,000 people in there, it's loud, but it's different.
It is different in that, like, Husky Stadium last year for that Oregon-Washington matchup, being mm-hmm. on the field, like, it was loud, and, like, you can feel the noise. But it was like a different kind of loud. Like, in Autzen, because it's so tight, the stadium goes so high, and it's not expansive.
No, but
there's nowhere for any of this sound to go. Like, your teeth, that USC game last year, your teeth start to rattle. It's the weirdest sensation and feeling, but it is cool. It got, like, gives you chills just mm-hmm. kind of thinking about how loud it gets there. I'm excited. I think it'll be a great atmosphere. The weather will be great too, so it won't be like rainy and cold. It's going to be perfect for football. And you got two really damn good teams that everybody is saying, this is the first time that we get to see both of these teams play elite competition against each other. And it's going to be a hell of a football game.
It's gonna be fun.
Really will be.
And we'll spend a whole lot of time this week diving into every other nook and cranny that concerns that game. All right, come up next, we'll put a nice little bow on today's show before we hand you off to Isaac Kasuk here on Danny Dusty, Tony the Fan.
It's time for a Blazers report on the Fan. The inside story on the Portland Trail Blazers, brought to you by Aztec Willie's Taqueria.
To me, when you haven't played in that long, when you start pushing and pushing, you open yourself up to hammies and growing. So it sucks, but it's still positive.
That was Trailblazers head coach Chauncey Billups talking about Robert Williams III suffering a minor setback with a left hamstring injury coming back from his right knee surgical repaired. He will be out for a couple weeks. Unsure if the Portland Trailblazers will have him for opening night on the 23rd against the Golden State Warriors. One thing is for certain, the Portland Trailblazers will not have Shaedon Sharpe opening night, and likely not until around Thanksgiving, as he suffered a shoulder injury, a posterior labral tear in his left shoulder. He will be reevaluated again probably around Thanksgiving.
Oh.
Yeesh. This Trailblazers report on the Fan is brought to you by Aztec Willie's Taqueria, the best place to go before and after games or any event. Check them out on the corner of Southeast 15th and Broadway or at AztecWillies.com. Well, we went through the entirety of Monday without talking one lick of NFL. That kind of gives you any idea of what the sports weekend was.
It was a lot. There was a ton.
Yeah.
But we got Monday Night Football game tonight.
We do.
That it could get a little spicy, too, with the Saints and the banged-up Kansas City Chiefs, man.
Yeah, who's Mahomes going to throw to?
Travis Kelce, finally.
Finally?
Yeah.
God,
yeah,
if you draft Travis Kelce like the first round of your fantasy league, you have got to be just...
It's not how you start, it's how you finish.
Wanting to take a header.
You're going to be fine. You're going to be fine. He's going to warm up.
Tough.
Everything's going to be okay. It's going to be okay.
Yikes, dog.
Swifties, you have his back.
There you go.
It'll be fine.
Hey, look, in the NFL, it doesn't matter how many you win by. It's just that you win.
No, just get by. And right now, that's like that's the scariest part about Kansas City.
Is they're just chugging along.
They're not clicking on all cylinders yet.
And still winning.
And they don't. Patrick Mahomes has nobody to throw the ball to. They're 5.5-point favorites tonight.
I don't like that.
Wrap your head around that one.
I don't like
that. Well, you're a Raiders fan, and you guys just lost to the Broncos.
Not great.
Which that Bo Nix quote yesterday was phenomenal.
Which we'll discuss tomorrow.
Yeah, we got a lot of NFL.
Tomorrow will be all NFL.
Yeah, baby.
All NFL all the time.
Yeah.
Football.
Yeah. Unless another Blazer gets hurt.
Oh, God. Why would you even put that out there?
Well, because we're two in the last 2 days, Danny.
You're not wrong.
Or I guess Friday we heard about.
Still.
We heard about
Robert. We weren't here on Friday. I wasn't.
Just stay healthy, guys.
There you go.
That'll do it. That'll fix it.
There you go.
They should hire me. Consult that training staff. I'll definitely get that done.
Hey.
All right. Hey, Isaac and Souk live and on location today. Hmm. They're at the Stadium Sports Bar.
That sounds fun.
All right. Yeah. Go get it. Isaac and Souk, 3 hours or 4 hours of power from their mouths to your ears. Coming up next right here on The Fan. Have a great Monday.
Bye.
Get the big one when you can. You have large ones.
Red Rover, Red Rover, send Rust right over.